This talk was recorded at Against the Stream Buddhist Meditation Society in Los Angeles and is freely offered for your enjoyment. For more information, please visit againstthestream.org.
Yeah, so like part of me just really wants to shake it all up, and I don't know if we're going to sit for 30 minutes. No, we will. We will. And I guess we'll do that first. How I want to practice tonight, I'm sure that each of you in here has varying practices. Maybe some of you are working on the breath or some kind of concentration practice where you're returning back to a focal point. Who is practicing like that right now? Who has a concentration practice, focal point practice? Okay. You could also, your focal point could be your hearing. Doesn't only have to be breath or body. It could be multiple things. The other way that we practice, or one of the other ways we practice, is actually this thing we call Vipassana, right? This insight meditation practice that we're working on. Who feels that they have a Vipassana practice? More of an open awareness, choiceless awareness practice. So that's kind of what I'm interested in tonight, is working on that. But a very specific part of that. So what I want you to do is every time you have a moment of awareness, to notice it. Okay? So meaning, you're going to be sitting here. See how long you can stay mindful. Mindfulness, by definition, is a wholesome mind state, which means there's no greed and no aversion attached to it. So if you find yourself in any desire or hate or lust or agony or any of those states that are less wholesome, I hate to use the word unwholesome, but less wholesome, it means that mindfulness isn't happening. Because it means that you're wanting the moment to be different than it actually is. So when we want the moment to be different than it actually is in any way, we're not being mindful. We're reaching, we're clinging, we're craving a different experience. We can be mindful and be in pain. We can be mindful and be sad. We can be mindful and have lust feelings, emotions, experiences. The only difference is there isn't a craving or a clinging that's attached to it, that belongs to it. We're meeting the pure, bare experience, like the barest, nakedest experience. An excellent experience, a Harbin experience, like you're buck naked, right? There's nothing attached to it. That is mindfulness. And it's subtle, and it's sneaky, and it's pure. But that's the clear scene. So when we're in this practice that we're going to do, really noticing moment by moment where you are. And using, I want you to use this muscle of noticing each time you arrive back. That's where I want you to put your attention. Every time you come back. Okay? Because a lot of times we put our attention, you know, like we were saying, on the breath or on the body or on the sound. This time we're going to bring it in just a little bit. Does that make sense? I see you shaking, nodding your head. You got it? Okay? And you're going to have these moments where it's kind of like, yes, yes, you're going to just keep feeling excited that you found it. That's good. Like, that's good, because this liberation thing is actually exciting. It's actually pretty joyful. It's rich, and it feels good.
that one more time every time we have a, what are we going to do?
So often when we're sitting, right, we're sitting here and we notice that we're gone. That point of noticing that we've been away somewhere in a thought or in an emotion or whatever, a fantasy, our memory, our conversation, wherever we were, that point when you notice that you've come back, I just want you to like pat yourself on the back, right? Just acknowledge every time you notice that you've come back. That simple. You don't need to put your awareness anywhere else. I mean, I invite you to do whatever your practice is. You can if you want. I just want to really refine, because for us to gain awareness, to really learn what this mindfulness piece is, we have to see it, right? We have to know it. We can't just think about it. We can't wish it. We have to know it. And it really takes slowing our process down greatly to be able to do that. And we're so busy in life, right? Moving, that we're so habituated, we notice when it's too late. We notice when we're already in the action, or we've already said the word, or we've already taken the step, or we've already done the thing. And most of the time it's not tragic, it's not awful, but sometimes it is, and we wish we hadn't. So what we're doing is we're pulling it back, pulling our awareness back to the moment of contact. And when I say contact, I mean when one of our senses, our seeing, our hearing, our tasting, our touching, our smelling, and in the Buddha Dharma, thinking, a thought is also one of them. So we have six senses. So the second one of those things contacts an object, so the second our eyes see the plant, before we even know it, we either are liking that plant or we're disliking that plant. I personally dislike it. I still haven't gotten used to them. I don't know if it's dislike, but I just haven't gotten used to them. So there's a slight aversion to them. They're in my way. There's something I can't see Leslie. Like, I don't like them. So before we even have any perceptual or cognitive or even volitional choice, we have a like or a dislike to something. Like I said, it's not volitional. We're not doing it on purpose. It's just an immediate thing that happens. So it's not our fault. That's the good thing, right? Like, I was in the grocery store yesterday, and it's awful, and I'm going to be just so awful right now by saying this, but there was this woman, and all I had to do was hear this voice. I didn't know her. I just didn't like her voice. It just made me uncomfortable. Like, I didn't like it, and all of a sudden, I had all these judgments about her. I knew what school she went to, what kind of boyfriend she had, what her house looked like, what kind of wardrobe she wore. You know what I mean? Like, I had this whole idea about this woman just from hearing this voice. And the beauty of that, because I'm a practitioner, is I went, oh, that's so interesting. And it's not my fault, right? It's my fault if I choose to not be friends with her because of it, right? It's my fault if I choose to be grumpy and grouchy towards her because of it. That would be my fault. It's not my fault that this feeling of just unlike arose. And there's a freedom in that. There's like that, that's really kind of nice. Now, what happens is after we like or dislike something, the next thing that happens is we either lean towards it, right? So that's when greed happens. That's when liking happens. Or we lean away from it, which is aversion. So it's either greed or aversion. Like, we do this or we do that. Or it's neutral. We could care less and I didn't even hear her. I'm just dead to the world, right? But so this is what we do. The feeling happens, not our fault. The craving instantly happens. Liking or disliking. And then we start clinging. This is the second noble truth, right? We start clinging to either wanting to push the thing away or to get more of it. It can be the tiniest of things, you guys. It could be seeing a parking space. You know, that empty parking space that you've been circling the block for, and instantly, the parking space, have to get to it. You know, it's like we go into this automatic pilot. Doesn't matter who's around, we're going to get it. So here's where our choice point is. Parking space isn't a good idea, a good example, because we do need to get parking space. But this is our choice point. We notice, this is where awareness is really important, and this is why this practice that we're going to do is really important. I'm sorry I kind of went off into this thing, but I think it's really necessary. This is where we have the choice to be free or to get caught in the wheel of samsara again. We can go in that same, we could go into liking, craving, clinging, and then you can tell your own story from there. Liking, craving, clinging, hating, liking, craving, clinging, wanting. And this is where we cause ourselves a lot of grief. So I just want you to watch that right now. This is the fine tuning, the very fine tuning, from the subtlest things to the noise in the room to the Zumba class that's going on somewhere, who knows where it is, to whatever's going to arise within you regarding what you did or didn't have for dinner, or who you're going to see, or a conversation you had earlier in the day, or, you know, it's, take your pick. You guys will have your own story. But really pay attention. And then notice when you come back. Notice when you come back over and over again. This is the glue point in this practice that we're going to do right now. Notice if greed or aversion are present, liking or disliking. Don't have to judge it. Don't have to identify with it. You don't have to be a bad person because of it. Just notice it. Okay? And that's why we shut our eyes and we stop moving and we sit down for a minute, is so that we can clearly see that. We get to see the truth. We get to see the reality. We get to see where we're deluded. We get to see where we lie to ourselves or whatever we do. This is our little test tube. This is our place. And then we'll go and walk out of the room and it'll all go to shit. And that's okay. Because the more we practice, the more our brain, and I'm not going to get into the brain science of it, but there is a whole brain science around it, which is really fascinating and exciting. And I encourage everybody to look into it because it's good news for our practice. You know, it only supports our practice. Okay, enough said. So I'd really like to stay as close to this quality as we can for just the half hour that we have left together. Really utilizing, because it's so easy to be like, okay, that was my formal practice period. Now I'm not in my practice period anymore. And moving into something else, right? Moving into entertainment or listening or something that we do next. But not missing any opportunity to stay in your practice. And I find for me that the time that I'm actually most peaked to my practice is when I'm listening to somebody else, especially when I'm just in a one-on-one conversation. I was just having lunch with my friend Mo the other day, and it's reminding me of that. It's like how when we're in relationship with people, with one person or a few people, being in our practice is really vital. And this is, it's a great time to practice. Because moment by moment, we're having some kind of reaction to what the person is saying, to what we are thinking, our opinion of it, what we want to say next. You know, all the jumping in that we do before somebody's even finished a sentence. Really beautiful opportunity to do exactly what you were doing on this cushion. Noticing the arising, the non-volitional arising of liking or disliking what someone's saying. And then what happens next? Wanting to control, wanting to change, wanting to get your way, wanting them to like you. You know, we have all these things that happen in conversation with somebody. But this practice we can take everywhere. We can take when we're creating our art. We can take when we're having sex. We can take when we're watching TV. We can take when we're eating. There's never a moment lost. And it's actually beautiful. It can seem at first tedious. I mean, I remember when I first started really practicing, it was exhausting. Can't I please stop? You know, I didn't want to be on the ride anymore. But I didn't have a choice at that point. Like, it was already engaged, you know. The lever was pushed. But there's this way that then what ultimately happens is an intimacy with life like you've never had before. I had a really, really bizarre experience last week. And I only say bizarre because in actuality it was an insight. And I don't know, you know, when you have an insight, like a real one, that's new, it changes your life, right? It alters everything if we understand the insight and continue with it. Oftentimes we'll have these insights and we forget to work with that. And that's when we lose momentum in our practice. Do you know what I mean? Have you ever realized something and gone, oh my God, I can't believe I do that. I'm never going to do that again. And then we do it again and again and again. Well, when we really notice that we're doing something and actually with courage and effort continue through, follow through with it, it's a pretty cool thing. And that's when we see change happen. But anyway, for me, what arose is, I don't know if you guys heard about, there was this horrible murder in Los Feliz last week. And it was about a block and a half away from my house, right? So it was just a morning of news cameras and just that icky feeling. And for me, I'm a very moribund and just, I have these horrible images and violent thoughts and always have ever since I was little. So for me, I just want to know what her last thought was. It was an elderly woman who was killed by a tenant who lived in her home. And, you know, for me, I just really go into the macabre with it, right? So I was in that space that night. I have two kids, and I'm a single mom. And, you know, so I'm kind of like the protector of the house as well as the nurturer of the house. So I hold these two roles, but I am sort of hyper-vigilant about their safety. You know, I feel like I need to be that person in the home. So I found myself that evening feeling really tense. And I have dogs, and every time the dogs barked, it was a killer, right? And every time I heard anything, it was a killer. And it was just like everything went back to this feeling that I allowed myself to delve into earlier in the day. And like I said, ever since I was a kid, I've had these, I've always had this, like, I know that I'm going to die by being stabbed 500 times in my own home, right? And that's just like a knowing that I've had ever since I was little. And So I got into bed that night, and I was trying to fall asleep, and I was trying to be comfortable in my bed, and I was trying to relax my mind, and I was trying to be at ease, but all I was having were just these horribly violent, fearful, aggressive images. And the thing about those kind of images is I can't lie to myself and say, oh, those things don't happen. That's not real, you know. It does happen. It is real because it just happened down the street from me, right? And so I want to feel like, oh, I'm just afraid of the boogeyman. But in reality, no, my fears are real, and they're real horrors that happen on this planet where we live. And so I'm laying there feeling, being a practitioner, right? So I was allowing myself to feel all of the sensory experiences that were arising in my body. Very rapid heartbeat, really dry mouth. My eyes were moving rapidly even though they were closed. My jaw was tight. You know, all those things that we have that arise. So I was just trying to feel the sensory experiences of my deep fear. Because I was just in a lot of fear, a lot of anxiety. And I didn't know how to get out of it, right? And then that's when it hit me. It's like, you can't get out of it. That's the problem. I'm wanting this moment to be different than it is. And why I say this is bizarre is because I've never done this before, but I actually like, because I'm super not like, I've had woo-woo, metaphysically weird things happen in my life, for sure. But I'm a pretty pragmatic person, right? But I found myself calling on the Buddha. But I was calling on, like, the historical Buddha. Like, I was actually calling on the dude. Like, I could smell the earth that he sat on under the tree when he had all of, you know, Mara trying to attack him in those days before his enlightenment. So I was actually calling on this guy and just sort of saying, like, what did you do? Like, how did you do it? How did you get through and past this horror, you know, trauma, terror? And I remembered, I was like, oh yeah, because this is what we forget, right? When we're in a deep peak experience or moment, we forget our practice. But if we have it in us enough, we remember. So that's why we do this on the cushion. So I remembered my practice, and I was like, oh yeah, suffering exists. And why it's so painful is because I'm wanting the experience to be different than it is. So what if I just allowed myself to let go and totally and completely experience suffering? You know, really meet it, really know it. As Ajahn Sumedho says, it's not understanding it, it's standing under it. Right? So standing under. What I was really experiencing is terror in that moment. Because there was nothing I could do. And we're always trying to find the escape route, right? We're always trying to find what we could do to make us feel better. From the littlest things like a bowl of ice cream to the bigger things like a fifth of tequila. We're always trying, and a lot of times there is a way out. You know, a lot of times we can do these little things that make us feel better. And sometimes we just can't, and I couldn't. There was nothing I could do. You can't get away from the boogeyman. You can't. The boogeyman's there. In your dreams, right? No door, you can't lock a door, you can't anything. That's in my world anyway. And so I had this really insane, and I can't tell you what happened or why it happened. All I know is that, and I'm going to use the word surrender. It's not a word that is used in this practice, really. And I'm not sure why, but it was this moment of complete letting go. That's more what's used, letting go, surrender. And I felt a peace that I hadn't felt in a really long time. Because I wasn't fighting. Mostly my mind, because that was my mind. Nothing bad was happening in that moment, right? That was all my mental habituation, my conditioning, my fears from childhood, whatever, you know? Deep-rooted trauma. But since I couldn't get away from it, there was nowhere to go, I had to meet it. And in that moment, in the meeting, I found peace. And I fell asleep. Right? Like, that to me is peace. We can't fall asleep in a fear state. Our bodies won't let us. So that's why, you know, it's so important over and over again. We can hear the Four Noble Truths teaching over and over again. And oftentimes if we come to enough classes, we're kind of like, oh, they're giving a talk on the Four Noble Truths. I already know the Four Noble Truths, right? I already know, I've heard that suffering exists. I've heard that the cause of suffering is craving and clinging and attachment. I've heard there's an escape, and I know that the escape is the Eightfold Path. I've heard it already. That's great that you've heard it already. But until you're working it and doing it and feeling the liberation from it, we haven't heard it already. We don't know it yet. So there's this poem by this mystic, modern day mystic. His name's David White. I don't know if you guys know who he is, but he's a really awesome dude. One of these days I'm going to go spend some time with him. He does these retreats, like we'll go to Belize for 2 weeks, and he'll only take about 10 people. You know, and they'll just sit around and talk about cool stuff. I'm going to do that one day. So it's called Start Close In. And this just reminds me of what we're talking about. Start close in. Don't take the second step or the third. Start with the first thing close in, the step you don't want to take. Start with the ground you know, the pale ground beneath your feet, your own way of starting the conversation. Start with your own question. Give up on other people's questions. Don't let them smother something simple. To find another's voice, follow your own voice. Wait until that voice becomes a private ear listening to another. Start right now. Take a small step. You can call your own. Don't follow someone else's heroics. Be humble and focused. Start close in. Don't mistake that other for your own. Start close in. Don't take the second step or the third. Start with the first thing, close in, the step you don't want to take. So that just, you know, really reminds me so much of that first noble truth. Knowing, really deeply knowing the taste of our own suffering, the taste of another's suffering. We can't have compassion until we really know. Because then all we're doing is trying to escape. All we're doing is trying to run. It doesn't work. There's that saying, grass can grow up through a crack in a sidewalk. You know, it's like, I can't get my damn lawn to grow, but the grass will grow through, you know, you'll see, I don't know who camps here, but you'll see a boulder and there'll be a tree growing out of it, right? Like, how does that happen? Anyway, that analogy metaphor to me just means sort of like, you know, stuff is going to come up if we don't look at it. It's going to come up if we just keep trying to push it aside and have it hide, because it doesn't. Grass grows up through a crack in the sidewalk. Let's just sit together for a minute. And just sitting with whatever you've learned this evening, whatever is helpful to take with you, whatever was a crock of shit and useless, leave it behind. If anything I said at any point offended anybody, I ask for your forgiveness. If anything was useful and helpful, please go out from here, spreading and sharing with others. May you be happy. May you find peace and ease. May you be filled with loving kindness. May you be free.
You have just listened to a podcast from Against the Stream Buddhist Meditation Society. If you'd like to make a contribution to help support these teachings, please visit againstthestream.org.